Pubcast.
It's this terrible feeling of helplessness because we don't know what we don't know. And one of the messages that I want to bring into the world from this book is that I want people to know they can step into their power and they can heal all of these disempowering narratives and these very difficult emotions and traumatic memories.
Welcome to the Liberated Healer Podcast, where we touch on a variety of topics in the world of spirituality, energetic healing, and everything in between and beyond. Take an adventure on a shooting star with your host, Gina, and offering their wisdom, guidance, and everlasting love and support.
Hi, everybody. Gina Cavalier, Liberated Healer Podcast. Welcome again. We have another show. We have Luciana Passeri on, Dr. Luciana Passeri. And she has a really fascinating story. I'm going to let her get into her background and what she's working on right now. Welcome. Nice to have you.
Thank you, Gina. I'm really grateful to be here. Thank you.
So you have pretty fascinating, you're a communicationologist and international work and social work and all kinds of fascinating things. I also want to put a disclaimer that we might be talking about suicidal ideation, going back to the book that I have coming out in June. And then you also have a segment in it in your book. So we might be bringing that up just so people are aware. If you don't want to be hearing that or contributing to that, you can click off. But let's talk a little bit about what you're working on and what you got going on.
Yeah, thank you. Well, I have a memoir that I wrote this last year. It's called Gods in a Box on My Dresser, An Inquiry into the Human Capacity to Thrive. And the premise of the book is really how we clock what I call our God boxes, which is our definitions of divinity that can keep us stuck in certain disempowering narratives, can keep us stuck in disempowering thought, talk, emotions, and behavior. And the book is about how to untangle without necessarily losing your sense of religion. For those people who are really called to religion and find it beautiful, the book doesn't hate on religion, but it's about kind of dismantling this idea that we have a power to define a God or divinity. And the book unfolds actually on an island in the Amazon where I lived for 30 days to heal the traumatic memories and experiences from my childhood. And so the story is about me really excavating my soul, working with plant medicines, with indigenous healers, Shipibo people from the Amazon or Peru, and really digging in and doing my work. And as I did that work in the jungle, I just had such beautiful revelations and downloads, clearly that were percolating in me for a long time. But just couldn't download. And I think it's because, you know, in the Western world, we have so much clutter, right? We have digital clutter, we have emotional clutter, we have thought clutter, we have these disempowering narratives and on and on and on. So we can go our whole lives without ever having to really sit with ourselves. So that was one of really the greatest gifts of the jungle, to give me that space to have these really beautiful downloads.
Were you a doctor at the time when you were doing this, or did you come back and become a doctor?
No, I was. I was already a doctor. This was in my adult life. This was only, I went to the jungle in 2019.
Okay.
So for the first time, or 18, I'm sorry, 2018. But I had all these disempowering narratives from abuse I endured as a child. And the way that I dealt with that abuse was through developing a raging eating disorder that I kept a secret, supposedly, for a lot of years. And I just became so desperate to heal. You know, I couldn't do it on my own. Well, before the jungle, it was decades that I was symptom free. I didn't have an eating disorder anymore. But the way I describe it is kind of like a dry drunk, you know. I still hadn't healed the narratives that had me stuck in disordered eating behavior. So even though it had been decades before I went to the jungle that I didn't really suffer from an eating disorder, I still had a lot of clutter. Yeah.
I clearly got through my guides that there's three easy steps to just an amazing, beautiful life. And the first one is healing. The second one is clearing. So it's like you have to heal the abuse and the programming and you know all that stuff, but then you have to clear it. The clearing is the part that people don't talk about a lot. And then the third one is to go in service, and that could be in service to anything. But you know, when you get in service, it is a long journey. It is scary, you know. So when we talk about it, we're like, oh, just go heal, you know. The people that have gotten to the other side of the mountain, like we're like, we know it's gonna suck. That's why we do this podcast. That's why we're out here talking, because it is hard to unpack those difficult things. Mm-hmm. We get it. So your book and what we're doing is, look, you're like breathing, because it's, you know, that's why they call it the dark night of the soul.
Right.
But when you get to the other side, oh gosh, does it feel great? Yeah.
It does. And you know what? Everybody can do it. Yeah. I was one of those people who was so desperate to heal. I had made deals with God. I made deals with myself. I made, you know, please just take this away from me. And of course, in hindsight, I realized that nothing could pluck the disorder that I developed to deal with the emotional and behavioral traumas that I experienced. Nothing could do that. I had to do the internal work. And one of my mantras is, you know, don't expect anything external to change until we've done the internal work. And as scary as it is, and you said that in a beautiful way, we can all do it. And actually, what I found, Gina, is just clocking once that first thought of fear, even though it might be a really small thought, if we can begin to clock a fear, that is a transferable skill. Can I give you a little story from the jungle on this? Okay. So it's not tangential, I promise. So when I was living in the jungle, I was on this little island in the Amazon living under a mosquito net, right? Really close to a swamp with anacondas, huge spider, blah, 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 blah. Okay. So one of my first couple nights in the jungle, I'm laying under my mosquito net, and this massive rat would run in, you know, right here. Okay. So normal for people to really not love that, right? And I would freeze in fear. Well, at one moment I stopped and I kind of giggled to myself, and I'm like, look, Luciana, you've got some choices here. You can be afraid of this rat for the next 30 days and have it paralyze you, or you can chill out. And so I named that rat, me and my friend, we named the rat Mr. Tickles. And then every night, I know. And then every night when it came, we would just say, Mr. Tickles, go to bed. And I share that story because that is an example of me just changing my mind, literally in a moment, just changing my mind. Well, when we can do that, whether it's just with something small, well, the rat was really big, but something small that's really not going to kill us, or even if it's doing it with something really small, like I'm going to do this small bit of public speaking, or I'm going to step up in this meeting, even though I'm afraid to, and I'm going to say something. Those little micro advances are super powerful. And then when we go to do the really deep work, we have these little experiences that have built within us, and they matter. They really, really matter. And so even though it can be really hard to do the work, I do think there are some pathways that we can walk or make for ourselves that make the work a little simpler, you know, that we cannot maybe take it so seriously, which isn't to say, I mean, I suffered extreme abuse. And so I'm not suggesting that's not really serious, And at the same time, as part of the healing process, I have to relax my shoulders. I have to breathe. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I love your little story about Mr. Tickles, because that's a living being just trying to live its life as well, you know? And so, you know, connecting with that being, because you have a predestined idea that a rat is filthy and dirty and scary, but it really is just doing its job on the planet, you know? And so now you're understanding, you're moving with the things of the world. You're not separating yourself. Just saying, I'm a human and you're this, you know, or whatever. So I feel like when you were explaining it, I was seeing this energy of you're becoming one with the energy around you, which I think no matter where you are, you can do. Like if you're living in an apartment, you know, in a high rise or something, but you see a spider, you know, the fear, you know, that, you know, but recognize first that is a living, you know, creature that has a duty. And is there a way to make it so it's not fearful and you know, going in that space, but that can contribute to everything that we have going on in our life. You know, I talk all the time that we don't teach people conflict resolution, especially our children. They have no idea how to handle an issue. Do you know anybody who has not had any conflict in their life? No. So why did we need to learn how to do this? And this is actually what I feel like you're saying as well, because every day something might happen. And so are you going to lose it every single time? Like you get an email you don't like, or, you know,
Right. Well, I love everything you said, but early on too, you were talking about, you know, that rat just doing its thing, living in the jungle. And you just helped me really solidify that same thing is true with our thoughts, right? Our thoughts and our emotions, no matter how difficult they are, how disempowering, what they're actually doing is trying to protect us from something we don't know we can handle. It just, our minds don't care, right? They just try to protect us. And what we have to really build within ourselves is that idea as adults. Children are very different. As adults, we don't need protection anymore. We can handle it. We can absolutely, and I am living proof, we can handle every memory and emotion we have. There are some ways to do that. Very often we need therapists and counselors by our side to help us do it, but we can handle it. And once we realize that we don't have to protect anymore those stories and those disempowering narratives, that we can handle it, they sort of just dissolve. They just dissolve and they no longer have that power over us. It's beautiful.
Well, how are some things that we can do that? What are you suggesting?
Thank you. So what I kind of excavate in the book is, in order to align with our highest selves, which I call thriving, and I define thriving by aligning our thoughts, our talk, our emotion, and our behavior, aligning them so they are in service. You talked about service earlier, so that those things, thought, talk, emotion, behavior, are in service to ourselves, to others, and to the planet. And once we have those aligned, life is so beautiful. And we can then design and live the life of our dreams. So the practical tangibles are stepping into our power and doing our own work. What are my thoughts that are disempowering? Oh my gosh, I think I'm dumb. I think I'm unworthy. Okay, where do those stem from? Oh my gosh, okay, so-and-so abused me. I had these experiences. As a child, I could do nothing about it. I'm not a child anymore. I can. And so, you know, it's really taking each one, thought, talk, emotion, and behavior, and separating those, even though they're connected, of course, because we're human beings, we can systematically separate them. And as we separate them, we have more power over that particular line. Like, for example, a fear. Can I give you one more example?
Yeah.
Okay. So I was sharing with you before we started that I started this slow fashion company called Passeri, right? It's a shoe company. Amazing. And I started it in Peru. Well, I don't know Spanish. I didn't know Spanish at the time. And as I was starting this company, I would walk down the street and I would have this intense, almost paralyzing anxiety that would come over me. And that anxiety would say, Luciana, you don't know what you're doing. You have no idea what you're doing. You don't speak the language. You've never built a factory, blah, blah, blah. And it happened. And after about a week, I was so like frustrated that the next time that thought came, as I was walking down the street, I stopped right in my tracks. And as the thought said, Luciani, you have no idea what you're doing, I looked up, I straightened my shoulders, and I said, you're right. You don't know what you're doing, but you'll figure it out. Yeah. And I gave myself permission to not know. And that is a great example of fear, how that anxiety, you know, that fear that I'm guessing your listeners will be able to relate to, most humans on the planet can relate to, but that anxiety, that fear was so powerful by me just naming it and saying, yeah, of course I don't know what I'm doing, but I can figure it out.
I like how you said the word permission, because I teach something called permission slips. It's like giving yourself permission slips, you know, to different things. Cause you know, I don't know. It's just, yes, I can do that. And you know, it's almost like writing yourself a little permission slip. Yes, you are able, you're going to be able to do this and things like that. Yeah, and early on you talked about, you know, but you know, a lot of my listeners and people that know me know I have a book coming out in June about surviving suicidal ideation with the Swedenborg Foundation and Dr. Amelia Kelly. And we're trying to bring levity to the ideation part. We're really mostly focusing on ideation, you know, not the action part. That's, you know, but a lot of people actually live for periods of their life in this ideation cycle, you know, it's, and it becomes obsessive. It becomes very secretive. I mean, look at, I'm an outgoing person. This is how I was my whole life. So when I told people I had suicidal ideation, they were like, what? You're like this super happy go lucky person. It's like, yes, that's my true nature. But I got to a point where I didn't want to be here anymore. I really did. It was like, there's nothing for me. I don't know who my tribe is. I don't know. I just don't feel anything and I want to go home. You know what I mean? It was this like deep sense of like, I don't belong on this planet. So you have had that too, and you had an eating disorder, and that's really scary. And I don't know anything about how an eating disorder feels. I didn't have that. But can you talk a little bit about that journey and how you got to your healing and clearing?
Yeah, yeah. And thank you for sharing a little bit of your story. I'm sorry you suffered like that. I know the desperation of that suffering. Thank you, and I honor that. So for me, my eating disorder took over my life. And as I was saying earlier, it had to, because the older I got, the more protection I needed from the terrible memories and traumas of being abused for so long as a child. And so I understood cognitively why the eating disorder was there eventually, probably in my early 20s. I understood that, but I had no power over it. And I was so desperate. I would make deals with God. I would make deals with myself. If you don't eat healthy today, you're going to do X, Y, or Z, or God's going to punish you, and giving God permission, please punish me if I do that. It's this terrible feeling of helplessness, because we don't know what we don't know. And one of the messages that I want to bring into the world from this book is that I want people to know they can step into their power, and they can heal all of these disempowering narratives and these very difficult emotions and traumatic memories. And it doesn't have to take them 20 years. It took me 20 years. It does not have to take people 20 years. And I want my healed memories and experiences now to be in service to other people. And I mean that with every cell in my body. So my suffering, you know, was intense and brought me to these kind of deal-making episodes. And along the way in the healing process, I had some really embarrassing and shame-filled experiences. I was taken off a bridge by a police officer after talking to somebody on a suicide hotline. I wasn't going to jump off the bridge. I really believe that. I really, really do. And at the same time, when the reality was there of me getting in the back of this police officer's car, I was devastated and humiliated. Now, you talk about bringing levity to an experience. And I will tell you, these police officers in Stillwater, Minnesota, unbelievable. They stopped to get gas at one point, and the officer, he was so cute. He said, and I was, you know, like full of shame and embarrassment. He's like, "Can I get you anything?" And I'm like, "A Diet Coke." And he brought me a Diet Coke. And he was just so sweet. He's like, "You know what? You have nothing to be embarrassed about. Everybody goes through stuff. We're just here to make sure you're safe. You're okay." And he, beautiful, right?
Yeah.
It's really beautiful. But the ideation part, I'm really excited to read your book and see more of your work, because I think it's not that unusual to think about death because things can be so difficult. As we know professionally, you know, it's when somebody starts to make a plan or think out how to do something where you cross a real line. Yes. Not that the thoughts don't matter, but there are lines that we can cross. And I want to make sure and acknowledge that. But just the idea of suffering so much and not wanting to be on the planet anymore, I don't think that's that unusual. What did you find in your work?
Well, just to break down a little bit, we did do the five levels of ideation. And so 4 and 5 is obviously where you're starting to make plans and you're starting, and there's things that we write. We have a safety plan in the book and meditations, all kinds of things. But when you are starting, and there's little signs, there's going to be signs for people in there, like the family, that they can look out for. You know, I literally sold my house because I had a lot of equity in my house and I was just going to spend the money and then go. You know what I mean? I was like, well, I'm not going to let go of like a couple hundred thousand dollars. Might as well. But that gave that money. I use that money for healing. So I quit my job. And then I was already doing meditation and healing and all that stuff, but I really got into healing. And that's when I made the transference. And when you were talking about basically sort of having issues with your body, I think one of the last parts of healing that, you know, you're at a healing state is when you just love your body no matter what, because that's your temple and that holds your soul and that is your connected to spirit. And when you really get, you know, so you want to start eating better, you know, you start to see the energy of the food you're eating. You're like, should I eat all these whole plate of fries with chili all over it or something? And your body starts to say, can't we have something a little better today? You know, so that diet, you start to go, oh my gosh, I love myself. I want this thing too. I don't want it to be sick, you know, and things like that. So that's another level of, actually, to me, when I knew that I was healed, you know, because I just loved not just this energy and I woke up like dancing. I love my body and all of it, you know, and even letting it age, I'm like, oh, go for it. You know what I mean? You're worth it. Like, you know, you're worth that. Whatever situation happens. So,
Yeah. 100%.
But you know, but those little cues that people didn't know why I was selling my house or were asking me, you know, I went and rented a fancy apartment in Hollywood Hills, a whole house. I had parties. I was giving money to people. I was like, you've always been nice to me. Here's a couple thousand dollars. I mean, the signs were there, but nobody was, you know, I was giving away my clothes. I was, you know, like, I was just like take it. I just sent my friend $2,000 because she was having a hard time, or another friend, right? I was just giving, I was like, you've been nice to me, you know, and wow. I was really going to go, but, you know, God had another plan for me. I felt Liberated Healer came through the sky one night when I took too much CBD, which I think is, you know, and they're said, you know, you're healed now, and now you have to share it with other people. And I was like, what?
Right.
This is for me. I'm happy. Oh, dang. But I'm so grateful it did. So I guess that will lead us into some of the healing properties that you were doing, the ayahuasca, things like that. Can you talk about how that helped you with your healing journey then?
Yeah. So ayahuasca, I will say, is a great plant medicine. It's a psychedelic, but it is not for everyone. Yeah. And an important caveat, there are many people around the planet who do ayahuasca tourism, and it's very money driven. Yeah. And so if anybody is called to it, I want to put out there to be extremely careful and mindful. So having said that, I researched, briefly, but I had been also recommended this particular place in Peru to go to. And my experience with the medicine was that it allowed me to sit with some of the most uncomfortable and horrific things that had happened to me without entering the drama of them, which I had not been able to do in that same way. As I said, before I went to the jungle, I was healed of all behavioral symptoms for over a decade, actually, of any eating disordered symptoms. But the lingering emotions that still caused disempowering narratives to drive my life were there. And so ayahuasca is a medicine that, when used appropriately in the right context with the right healers, allows you to sort of reprogram your stories about yourself in those minutes in sort of a safe sort of way.
Yeah. And they're using like ketamine right now under doctor's guidance has helped a lot of people, and also mushrooms, of course, under guidance. And, you know, I just put a disclaimer on there too, because I know a little bit about the ayahuasca stuff. And, you know, if you don't have someone who's giving you full rules, like you can't eat for 2 weeks, onions or garlic, you can't have sex. I mean, if you have someone that's just saying, come over for the weekend, don't do it. No.
And so many other things. And, you know, when I wrote my book, I really wrote the book because a lot of people can't even partake in ayahuasca. If you're taking particular medications, you can't take it. Right. And so I want the world to know that you don't have to take ayahuasca or other plant medicines in order to heal your stories. And I think that was my gift. One of my gifts from the jungle was to tell the story of healing, to tell the story of aligning our thoughts, talk, emotions, and behavior in alignment with our highest self so we can thrive. I think that kind of system of healing downloaded so that I could teach it to other people. So yeah. Other people could heal without that same need, because not everybody does need it.
No, agreed. And I had a client the other day who just wants to go, has gotten so used to only doing mushrooms to clear out their thing. And I said, spirit just came to me and said, you can do this without that. That's a tool, and that's okay to do it once in a while, but you're going to have to learn how to do it on a daily basis. And you can't do mushrooms every day if you're running a, you know, things like that. So, right. So it sounds like you believe that too. So it's like, what are the daily tools that you can use when you can't go on an excursion?
Well, go ahead. Sorry.
So what are some of those tools?
Yeah. So meditation. And I don't mean it has to be meditation, because a lot of people aren't into that or say they can't do it or whatever. So if for people who can't sit and quiet their mind for 3 to maybe 20 minutes at a time, meditation could be writing. Meditation could be reading an oracle card or a piece of scripture if you have a belief system, or a, it's anything that takes you out of the clutter you're sitting in, right? And allows you to connect with your highest self. I have some songs that, you know, sometimes I play as my meditation so that there's something going on in the background, but it's feeding me with really beautiful, and these are slow, you know, songs that feed me, you are beauty, you are love, you're the light of your soul, those sorts of things. So one tool is to make time every day for ourselves to connect with the highest part of ourselves. One of the best ways, so here's, so I've already talked about kind of aligning the thought, talk, emotion, and behavior, but I want to talk about another specific tool, and that's dreaming. I want to encourage people to use their dreams. So a couple things here. The first is that before we go to sleep, we can intend for our dreams to create spaces for us. So what I have said before I go to bed, and this is for over 20 years, 30 years, maybe since I was a child, I would say something like, help me clarify any confusion and enlighten my path in my dreams. Well, lots of stories for me about dreams. I've always been a really powerful dreamer, which when you have traumas, that can actually make your dreams even worse. But lucid dreaming. So for people who say, well, I don't really dream, a tool is, I'm going to come back to lucid dreaming in just a second. A tool is when you are in the hypnagogic state. So the hypnagogic state of dreaming is when, like, you know, you're laying in bed, you know how you might feel like your foot drop? That's the hypnagogic state. That's the most powerful state where we are suggestible for going into our dreams. So whatever you are thinking in those moments will populate in your dreams. So lucid dreaming is also something everybody can learn. Lucid dreaming is when we become conscious in our dreams, right? A lot of people have experienced this, but maybe don't know that they were lucid dreaming. One of the coolest things about lucid dreaming, and I'll give you this from my personal example. So I was a gymnast when I was younger. And so when I lucid dream, I can do these flips and I can jump like 30, 40, 50 feet in the air and do twists and hang onto a chandelier and then jump to another chandelier and do more flips. So I can control the flips that I do in between, say, chandeliers, but I cannot control which chandeliers show, and I can't control who's beneath me. Mm. Why is that important? That's important because our dreams, the highest part of ourselves, are always, is always trying to communicate with us. So even though in my dreams, when I can control certain things, my highest self is always trying to support me. If we go into our dream spaces with trauma narratives, we can have, of course, difficulty sleeping. And dreams are weird anyway. I mean, even if we are our healthiest self, you know, we can wake up and go, what the heck was that kind of thing? But I do encourage people to have very good intentions when they go into their dreams. And then coming out of their dreams, the hypnagogic state, or there's hypnagogic and hypnopagic. When people are coming out of their dreams in that kind of wake up sort of stage, I like to encourage people to stay in that, right? Really stay in that state. Allow yourself to maybe go back to sleep or to put an intention out there. And there's lots of books that people can read to support them in either lucid dreaming or using their dreams to help them heal. Really great research and data on people being able to heal traumas even through their dream work. So that's a tool.
Yeah. And it's, and also if you have kids, you know, and they tell you they're having all kinds of dreams, you know, there has some, take a little bit of a deep dive, because I started having lucid dreams when I was really young, like 6 and 7. And I had a lot of abuse in my childhood. So because I had that, the lucid dreams were scary as well. You know what I mean? Because I was going to bed with fear, and then I would lucid dream, and then it would be really scary. And I would tell the adults around me, like, I'm having these really scary dreams. And they weren't just like nightmares. They were the lucid dreaming. Cause I was outside. I was conscious. I could move my eyes. I could see stuff. But paying attention to when a child says something like that, you know, going to figure out how you can maybe change the narrative for the child, because that was really scary, and nobody believed me or helped me. And I lived with that until until I was like way in my 30s, you know?
It
was scary. So, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, and can I build off that? Because we can teach our kids. So my daughter, my middle daughter, Serena, when she was maybe 6 or 7, she was having these really bad nightmares about Kitty Winky. I don't know if you remember Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. It's a, I think, Disney story, and it's why it's Disney story, where there's a person who kidnaps little kids and puts them in cages. I don't know, but Kitty Winky is the person in the movie who kidnaps little kids and puts them in this cage. So she was having these nightmares about Kitty Winky, and she told me about them. And so I worked with her, and for 2 nights, first I said, okay, when Kitty Winky comes into your dream, you know, you need to tell him he can't be here. He's not allowed. The third night she woke up, she said, oh my gosh, I did it. I did it. And she had kicked. She went into her dream, and when Kitty Winky appeared, she kicked him. Right. And then, of course, he never appeared in her dreams after that. She took control in her dream at such a young age. Wow. So we can support our kids by letting them know that when they go into their dreams, you know, try to, you know, face that. You're in your dream. You're safe. See if you can face it and tell them you won't go, or they're not allowed in your life, and that you are love, or whatever it is a child that age can happen or can handle, you know?
Since you're a doctor, can you just give us, like, is that just programming in our minds from something that is attaching? Like you see some content on TV, and then you're attaching a fear or something, and now it's playing a story? Mm-hmm. Or is that you think outer worldly, or you don't know?
It's all of the above. Okay. It's like you had real traumas, right? That were coming into your dreams, because our dreams are tools for us to heal. And so, yes, absolutely, it could be something we saw on like TV or heard or witnessed. It can be how our little personalities bump up against the personalities of our caregivers, how they manage anger that scares us, even though objectively they might, you know, just be angry. So it's a whole range of things that affects our dreams. But the bottom line is our dreams are spaces to help us heal from whatever it is we're experiencing during the day, in our waking hours. And then that higher self, like I was explaining, comes in our dreams. And I am so confident that it exists because of what I can't control in my dreams. I can control a lot. I've made boats appear to get me out of the water and, you know, all kinds of things, but I can't control it all. That's my highest self coming in and teaching me. Yeah.
I used to have angels, one angel when I was a kid. You know, I was like living in my closet at one point, and I remember him being really big and crouched down and like playing with me, you know, and things like that. So I just always felt like a protection of that, of the angels. And thank you, Archangel Michael and Gabriel and Raphael and Ariel and all that. You know, I really believe, I really call upon them in my life. But so it's fascinating. And your book is God's in a Box on My Dresser. An Inquiry into the Human Capacity to Thrive by Luciana Passeri. So is there anything you kind of want to leave us with today, or a meditation, or what are you feeling is going to be the right thing?
I think, Yeah, thank you for asking that. I think the most important thing that I want to share, and not to be a redundant liberated healer, but to let people know that you can handle it. I know deep, deep suffering. I know emotional wounds that feel like we have no power or control over them. And that is a story we have to tell ourselves in order to protect ourselves from experiencing things we don't know we can handle. But what I want people to know is we can handle them. There's tools we can use that, you know, that I've shared, that you're going to be sharing more in your book and other work that you do. I want to encourage people to read my book, not because, you know, not for any other reason than it's very relatable for a lot of people who have suffered from sexual abuse, from spiritual abuse, who have been confused about God or religion in their life, who have had an eating disorder, suffered from an addiction, or known somebody who has. It can be a very relatable, like, just deep breath, like, okay, yeah.
Thank you for your contribution. And where can I find your book?
Amazon is probably the best place, but Barnes & Noble a lot of Barnes & Nobles carry it, and you can get it at any major bookstore. You could order it if it's not in.
Well, we'll link everything on below, and we're just sending you everybody a lot of love, whether this is something that you need or somebody in your family. We're building the tribe. We're coming together, you know, just love and light and bringing levity to all these terrible situations. And like Luciana was saying, you know, when you really start to realize that you need healing and you see that mountain in front of you, you know, there will be a point where you get to the top. And when you get to the top, what really happens, and I just want to give you guys hope, is you actually will spread wings and you will fly down. And then when you get to that point, it feels so different. Obstacles are just different in your life. Relationships change and you just stand up taller. I can't explain it, but it happens. And we're hoping that everybody can get there. And the more that we can all get there, you know, it's like every single drop of water is something very important. So when you get there, we're going to celebrate it. And we're going to celebrate everything in this world that is good. Every day that is a good day. Wake up celebrating, put your arms around people that you love and your animals and the sky or whatever feels great to you. But we're just sending you so much love and compassion. And this has been a Liberated Healer. Thank you so much. Thank you, Dr. Luciani.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Bye.
If you enjoyed this episode, you can find us online at theliberatedhealer.com, on Instagram at Liberated Healer Podcast, or on Facebook at The Liberated Healer. Give us a follow, subscribe, send us a message if you so feel, and thank you for your support. Podcast.